Again, we are glad you were with us today, and we really do our best to try to make this time that can be encouraging. Did you see the video with the parents fighting at the Little League baseball game this past week? That's my cat. No, not really. We do have an old cat that 17 years old. Lived outdoors the whole time. We call her the lean, mean fighting machine because that's exactly what she does literally all the time. She loves to fight, and it seems to work for her. Well, I was referring to this little skirmish that occurred at a Little League baseball game. You may have seen it. You may not have. It doesn't really matter because one comes around every 3 or 4 months. Parents losing control, beating on each other, attacking the referee, chasing people around, and all this in front of their children, setting such a wonderful example. And we start to wonder, as we see these things on television, how in the world did these people get to this place? And yet if we go into our own lives and situations, we can imagine or we can remember being so frustrated, disappointed, angry that we've done things that cause us to fight in some pretty dramatic and some very unpleasant and embarrassing kind of ways. Churches have arguments from time to time. In preparation for this morning, I looked up some. One congregation divided over the fact that they had stopped using Folgers and they'd gone to Starbucks brand in the Sunday morning coffee. How about this one? A disagreement over using the term potluck instead of pot blessing. An argument over whether the church should allow deviled eggs at a fellowship meal. And one person suggested that they thought that would be all right if you had angel food cake for dessert. On and on it goes. The silliest one that I've been a part of is a lady in the congregation decided that the communion bread was inappropriate because there was dark on the cracker and that Jesus was perfect and that there shouldn't be any blemish on the cracker. And so she mounted a campaign to try to change that. The difficulty came in finding such communion bread. Obviously, you'd have to bake it yourself, and even then, it wasn't totally successful. So that kind of took the energy out of that particular argument. But it's amazing sometimes how people can get into those church fights. There's a church, I believe it's in Virginia, where the church divided over the paint color that they were going to paint part of the building. You can actually go there today. Neither group wanted to leave, and so neither group did. They put a wall right down the middle of the auditorium, and one group meets on one side, and one group meets on the other side. We've got to wonder not only what God is thinking, but what are other people thinking when they see this kind of behavior? James chapter 4, starting in verse 1 and going down through verse 3, addresses this very issue. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Good question. Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Pat Stringer had a number of different stories that she could tell and would often tell from her teaching days. But one of the stories that she shared was a little boy who came to her when she was teaching, I think, fifth grade. And he told her, he said, Miss Pat, I want you to know that there's better not be anybody that says anything bad with me around because I'll straighten them out. And Pat said, well, you know, I'm pleased that you like me, but, you know, we've got to be careful of our behavior. And the little boy said, well, it's not that I like you so much as I really like fighting. And sometimes we're reminded of that. That old song, Next 11, I like fighting best. I looked that up. I would have sworn that was from Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. It's actually from Shenandoah, so you learn something every day. But there are people everywhere who do like to fight. You can come across somebody in the grocery store. You certainly come across people on the highway. It seemed to be geared, ready, looking for a fight. What makes us want to do that? Well, it's our desire inside of us. We want to be first, or we want to be most important, or we want to have this, or we want to have that. We look at it on a grand scale. We see nations sometimes, or groups of people that are going after power or land or resources, and we understand history comes from a perspective of all this fighting for the desires that groups of people have. I think also it makes us feel powerful, makes us feel like we really have something that we can count on. We're strong enough to get our way in all kinds of different things. Sometimes I think people fight just to keep from being bored. And sometimes church fights develop into that. There's just not a lot going on, so let's create a little drama. And I don't know that people consciously think that, but certainly it happens that way. One of the theories of the pyramids in Egypt, you know that in that area that the Nile River would overflow and would create a very fertile land. And so the agricultural base around that process left a lot of time when the native people weren't working. They would do the fields, and then there'd be a part of time where there wasn't anything to do. And one of the theories is that the leaders came along and said, we got to give these people something to do. If not, they're going to be fighting all the time. And so they began to do these great projects in order to have a diversion from the conflicts that were taking place. And certainly as you look at that, whether that's true or not, you can understand how that theory might work. We live in a time where we probably take some pride in the fact that we're more civilized than that. We don't solve our disputes with a handgun in the streets typically, or with fisticuffs or various kinds of things that go on. We now enjoy sports. They can become kind of a substitute for fighting, especially the violent ones. We see that manifestation of that taking place. We have to be so careful about our words, our actions, our smallest behaviors. Because all it takes is a roll of the eye for somebody to know that you don't agree. You're contradicting what they're saying or what they're putting out. This morning, I want to remind you that fighting is part of our carnal nature. And people say, well, you just can't help it. You know, sometimes you get so angry. Sometimes you get so mad. Or, you know, given these right situations or this formula or various kinds of things, and fighting is what's going to happen. Okay, as long as you defend that, that's okay. But fighting is a part of our carnal side. And God is trying to lead us to our spiritual side, our spirit-led selves. And so as we move from carnal to spiritual, there are things we have to leave behind. Fighting is one of those things. Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 6 and going through 8. The mind governed by the flesh is death. But the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God. Go back to King James Version, and that carnal is the description there. If we're serving our carnal nature, our fleshly nature, our human nature, we're not going to be successful. And we're certainly not going to be productive, and God's not going to be happy with us. And this morning, as you think about fighting, I hope you'll get to the place where you'll start to say, you know, it is dangerous. And it's something that I want to do, or at least I want to do less of it than I'm doing. Jesus says in John chapter 13, and when you think about this verse, remember that the foot washing experience occurred at the first part of this chapter. This is just a little bit later on in that same chapter. When Jesus says to them, a new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And then that verse that we all know, most of us can quote, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. How well have we done on that score? How well has religion done on that score? Historically, internationally, globally, politically, constantly you hear people say, you look at the violence that comes out of these, quote, religious people. Jesus understood that. And he said, what people are going to be impressed about is that you love each other to the point that you're not conflicting. And when you're constantly in conflict, whether it be small or large, it's just an indication that you aren't who you claim to be. Now, I want to make a note here. James is not talking here about disagreement. The words that he's using are very strong words. The word to fight and quarrel. Those are strong distinctions. They're going to be things that we disagree about. As we come to hopefully one mind and one spirit, that involves some compromise and some change and some give and take. And so there's going to be things that we disagree about. But when they flood over to the place where it really is these kind of disastrous wars, is when it becomes so, so bad. Well, where does the fighting come from? The desires that battle within us. We have things we want. And he mentions four things there. You desire it, you don't get it, so you kill, you covet, you fight, and you quarrel. And the strongest one, of course, is that first one, and it kind of catches you flat-footed. People actually die. People die in the foyer from the battles that people have. Well, you know, we could say, I don't think I've ever seen that. And yet we know people whose lives have been literally destroyed by the attacks that have come to them. I'll show you three pictures here, just three random kids. I just typed in kids who have committed suicide because of bullying. And these are the first three that came up. There were page after page after page after page. And you'd say, this little boy, 9 years old, within the last week. And you'd say, well, bullying's not fighting, isn't it? Aren't you really trying to dominate somebody? Aren't you really trying to make somebody agree with what you want them to do? Aren't you really trying to have power over somebody else? We see lives that have been emotionally ruined. We see people who have become so desperate that they've made some really, really negative and difficult and certainly heartbreaking choices. Yeah, fighting. You don't have to be firing guns at each other to kill. We can kill people with words. The point simply is, this stuff does real damage. This is not something that just comes and goes. This is not something that just, well, it's not really as bad as we try to make it seem. This is really powerful, and it really does hurt. We get to the place where we say, I want this, and I'm going to have it. I'm going to make sure that my way is the way that we go. Matthew 7, Jesus has some words about this same idea as James has. And he says simply, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you'll find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. When there are things we want, what do we do? Well, God repeatedly says to us, ask for them. We have never really had much Halloween at our house. When we lived in Houston, there had been a tragic, tragic event that many of you perhaps know about that really, really ended Halloween in that area. When we moved to Oklahoma, we don't live in an area where many people come to our house. But so frequently, it's just people that we know or people that we have some connection to who come to our house and trick-or-treat on Halloween, and usually very few of them. But a couple of years ago, the doorbell rang. I went to the door, and there was a little boy standing there. He's about 3 years old, and of course, I knew who he was, and he didn't say anything. And his mom said, what do you say? He didn't say anything. She said, tell him what you say. He said, give me some candy. You know, it loses something in that process. When somebody asks for something, even trick or treat sounds better than, you know, pass out the stuff. And I believe it's important for why God tells us to ask. Because the whole situation changes. When I ask God for something, I am saying, I don't have it. I don't have the ability to obtain it. And I need it. And so I'm asking you for it. It also leaves the situation where there's a yes or there's a no. Anybody here grateful that God said no to you at some point in time in your life? I see heads.
Yeah,
there were times when this was the thing we wanted so badly, and God says, no. You know, the child wants candy for breakfast, cake for lunch, and ice cream for dinner. And even grandparents don't go that far because it's not good for them. And when you love somebody and care about somebody, you want to do what's best for them. And God says, ask me. I have infinite wisdom, and I will give you an answer based on what's best for you in accordance with my will. If you have the faith to do that. James says, sometimes your motive is selfish. You want to spend it. And when we say spend, typically we think about money or material things. But we spend other things. We spend our time. We spend our energy. We spend our love. All of those things have limits. And so when we're giving them or sharing them or holding back, we certainly are a part of that process where we're deciding how much that we're actually going to share. I keep mentioning as we think about these people that they're refugees. They're in a different place. Their lives have been turned upside down by Christianity. They've had to leave Judea and they've had to resettle into other places. And the extra stress that places on them is certainly to be remembered always. But when you think about it, they may have gone places where there were limited resources. And there may actually be limited resources for them. One of them may be getting something that one of the others would like to have. I remember being involved with a group that was had some people involved in a car accident. And one of the things that the adjusters or the lawyers for the insurance company did was they would go to those people and say, now we've set aside X number of dollars for compensation. And person A is asking for too much money. And if they get what they want, then you're not going to get what you want. And they played everybody against each other. And they made them all compete for each other for this finite amount of money that was totally arbitrary. But it worked. And it can work over and over again. As we look at these refugees, they may have been in that spot, you know. There's not much for us here, and if so-and-so gets most of it, then there's not going to be much left for me. And James is just trying to remind them, God's got it all taken care of. It's going to be all right. You don't have to fight each other. Well, is fighting going to occur? Sure it is. I can only control me. And if there's somebody else who wants to fight, then that can happen. Now, I can keep it from escalating. I can do various things maybe to slow it down. But if they're going to fight, it's going to happen. The other thing is there a time to fight? We all know that there is. There's a time when God calls upon us to stand up and defend. We're a part of the Lord's army. And so fighting would be part of it as well. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3. There's a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Those are places where fighting would certainly be involved. So how do we know if the fight is right or appropriate? Well, we go back to this motive. Is it our desire or is it what God is teaching us and has taught us and is leading us to? 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. Brothers and sisters, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit, but as people who are still worldly, mere infants in Christ. Wouldn't you be embarrassed to sit in the church service when that letter was read? I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you're still not ready. You are still worldly. How does Paul know that? For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? And then I love Paul's final question. Are you not acting like mere humans? We're God's people. We're the called out people. We're the Spirit-led people. We're not supposed to act like mere humans. We're supposed to act like the people that God has made us to be, given us the potential to be, given us the resources to use so that we can be those people. It's not good enough to have those little arguments, those little church fights, that little interest in drama or having something to be engaged in. It's about the kind of development that we can make if we really are committed to getting to that place where we're transitioning daily from being carnal to spiritual. If we can leave behind those things that are carnal and reach out for something better. This morning we offer an invitation, not a man-made invitation, but God's invitation. If you find yourself here today and would want to respond to that, we'd invite you to do so in just a few moments. If you have a public need, or excuse me, if you have a private need, there are people here, myself included, who'd be glad to discuss that with you. If you don't know what you need to do, we'd be glad to share with you and talk with you about that. But if you do have a need that you know, we'd invite you to come and express it now as we stand and sing.